It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever cost the government a cool billion with a B. Today's title is Jumping Hummers and the Billion Dollar Nerf Ball. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who bursts the calm bubble on a regular basis. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
That's right. Now, here we are starting on our third season, Brent.
Yeah.
First episode of our third season. What's this one going to be about? Where is it going? Is it more about me?
I think it will be. Only time will tell on that one.
That's so good to
hear. So stay tuned out there.
Okay.
Don't hit the skip button, whatever you do. With us today is our very special guest, the man who puts the roar in the war on terror, the blue-eyed devil himself, Rob Forrester. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, our main event will shed light on the lighter side of the war on terror. We will also face one of our harshest critics from the old Kentucky voicemails. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real. The sponsorship is fake.
Fresh Baltimore oysters. T.P. Pearson, having been appointed agent for one of the best Baltimore oyster lines, is prepared to furnish as good an article as can be obtained in market in any quantity. He solicits a share of the public patronage. He has also fitted up his ice cream saloon as an oyster room in as neat style as any in Frankfurt, and is prepared to serve up these delicious bivalves in all forms on the shortest notice.
It sounded like the oysters were at a dance. The oysters were at a soiree.
I think our bigger problem is the oysters are at the ice cream shop.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, Rob, are you going to go to Baskin Robbins for oysters?
It's the East Coast, so I don't put anything past
those guys. It's not something that's built into any part of my life, really. People like oysters everywhere, but it just does not sound good. And when you said bivalve, I was sure of it.
Yeah, I think that if you were thinking about it, if you were on the fence...
Yeah.
You hear the word bivalve and you're like, nope, I'm out.
I think it's like, I don't know. Maybe some people really do love it. They do. It's a fact that they do. But I think it's also like, I eat oysters, you know, I'm cool.
It's slime in a cup, Brent. I would not feel cool by eating oysters. I would feel totally grossed out.
Maybe I'm not giving them their due. Maybe if they were deep fried.
Yes,
hard
but
and
only that way.
Yeah.
Only that way.
Deep fried and pancake batter.
I could probably do that.
Yeah, I could do that one. Jason, you have been waiting for this moment for such a long time. You've been wanting some listener feedback.
Yes,
finally
from
out
some
there
feedback.
In the community. We've got it. We finally got our very first ever voicemail recording.
Oh, someone called in.
Thanks for calling Old Kentucky Tales. For English, press 1.
Para español, marque dos ahora.
For old-timely Kentucky talk, dial 3 on your rotary phone right now, y'all.
Your call is important to us. All of our historians, speech critiquers, and producers are currently unavailable. If you know your party's 4-digit extension number, you may dial now. For all other inquiries and comments, stay on the line and leave a message after the tone.
Hey, Old Kentucky Tales Hotline. I just want to add a comment about a previous episode I just listened to. This is Mitch.
Oh, it's Mitch.
Oh, really?
In it, you came down negative on eating liver.
We did do that.
A lot of people eat liver. The pharaohs ate liver. Hannibal Lecter, he ate liver,
and he was
a real famous person.
He was famous.
And yes, the idea that the liver detoxifies metabolites and produces biochemicals needed for digestion may not sound real appetizing.
You look that up.
Don't knock it. Now, Brent, I know you're a fan of the pun, so here's one. Live and let liver. I've been Mitch.
It was Mitch.
Well, that was a nice little surprise.
Why wouldn't it be Mitch? Right.
I don't know. I mean, is he...
What was he getting at? Like liver? Like we talked about liver that time. Liver's not good.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like we just knocked the oysters. He didn't like the fact that we weren't into liver.
Yeah. He's not... okay.
He's standing up for all the liver guys out
He's
there.
He's standing up for the liver. Yes, a very small group of people. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Good. Thank you, Mitch.
And I think they're all over like 65, honestly.
You're right.
That's probably it.
My mom would eat those. She'd eat those chicken livers.
Yes.
What?
Terrible.
Little bits.
Yeah, I don't know. It's nothing that I have even tried. I mean, I'm just sort of...
Of course you haven't.
No. No, I'm just
it's an organ.
Yeah, leave the organs out of it, right? Yeah. The innards. They used
I'm
to
glad
say
though.
Innards.
I'm glad we could get some feedback from somebody, right?
Yeah, well, that was valuable for what it was worth. And now it's time for the moment we've all been waiting for, the main event. And we have with us our very special guest, Rob Forrester.
Hello, hello.
Hey,
Rob.
How are y'all?
You've been sitting here.
Waiting patiently.
Yes.
To incriminate myself.
That's right. So the first story that you wanted to tell us was in the UAE, right? The United Arab Emirates.
Yes, sir.
And you were over there guarding some spy planes?
They were surveillance aircrafts.
Spy planes.
Sounds cooler, don't it?
Yeah, yeah, that is
more
cooler.
That's what he wants to hear it. Yeah, he wants to hear it.
Surveillance, YouTube, you know. It's
right.
That's right. And so what do these things do?
The U-2 spy plane and the Global Hawk were both surveillance for your ground forces. So what they were doing was giving any intel. Your Global Hawk mainly was, it would fly around. It was a big asset for your army troops on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling him one of the missions I was actually involved in was securing the site where the camper teams and the pilots went into a sea land. And that's where they operated and flown the craft from.
Right.
So I go in there that time. Of course, they were contractors and made some pretty good jack.
Right,
and then they had all the good snacks where our food wasn't all that. So I'd go in there and kind of talk to them, mingle. And this particular day.
Be friends with them
and get the
snacks.
Yeah, well, that's what I was doing, befriending them for the food. You know, young man, I got it, you know.
Yeah.
So I go in there and they were kind of busy that day. So I grabbed what I wanted and I go behind them, kind of watching what they're doing. And on the ground, I watch them as they're communicating with the ground forces. And they were giving them a heads up that up ahead, about 100 meters, there was forces that were unknown. So you see on the screen on the thermals, this ground force separate in an ambush position.
Okay.
So as his troops, he's calling out 60 meters, 50 meters, closing the gap on the single file formation heading towards them. So I'm sitting there watching all this go down on TV, basically. And you see them engage. You see the dust. And, of course, that's it. I mean, you know, they did their job and went to work. And all of them walked away because of that particular aircraft, the Global Hawk.
Yeah.
And that's the whole mission on that one. The U-2 spy plane was more... higher altitude, and they'd give, you know, the layout, you know, of the ground. But the Global Hawk was more, it was unmanned, you know, that way if it's shot down, no personnel lost, you know, so it was essential.
Right. And just the huge advantage of being able to see that kind of information in real time, all the time.
I think at 24, it was neat, but now at I'm older.
Right.
At 28, I'm 39. So, you know, now looking back at it, I realize what I seen, and it was pretty. It's even more neat to me now looking back at it.
And that's a really advanced technology too, and the major advantage really that we had in that conflict.
Yes.
But you saw something a little unspeakable, right?
Yes, I did.
Involving that plane,
I did.
What happened?
As normal, where we kept it, it was a hardened tent. It had, you know, soft outer shell, but it had the framework, metal or whatnot, and they'd lift the front part and roll it out. So they kept the Global Hawk inside, keep it out of the weather, you know, and they were all climate controlled too, just like your other aircrafts. When they paint them, they need, you know, a type of climate, you know, and you'll see mist and moisture to keep the coating for the surveillance part. So We get in there, and I'm doing my post checks, you know, and I go up there and check on a couple guys. I walk in, and they had a Nerf football. Well, they were throwing it around in this hangar with a $2 billion surveillance aircraft, and which, 24 years old, I knew it wasn't a good idea, but I was like, I'll just watch. You know what I mean? Like, I'm basically saying, you guys, y'all are idiots.
Right.
You know? So one of them gets an idea. Was, they were playing over the ventilation system in there. They try to throw it, throw the catch, and the other one would catch it.
Right.
Who clears it? So they were doing good to the left of the aircraft, so they thought, man, we're really getting good at this. So the other one went to the other side of the aircraft, and he thought, well, I'll just throw it over the ventilation system and get it to him. First couple times was successful. And this
last
one. That
leads a little to the imagination now about something wasn't successful.
So on this one, I watch, he throws it, and it kind of got a little goosey on him. Obviously, he didn't, you know, play quarterback in high school. So when it hit the ventilation, it fell, and it broke the antenna, which grounded it later. But,
right.
You know, we were unaware that you grounded this surveillance aircraft. I'm right. Like, and I'm thinking.
With a Nerf ball.
Yeah, yeah. So
the ultimate weapon for the Taliban and
Al-Qaeda. The antenna falls and it rolls in the crack, Rob decides, hey, they're good here. I've got to get the heck out of Dodge. You know, it ain't my fight anymore. I'm gone, you know.
You don't want to be asked about it.
No. I was like, oh, man. But on that, I was telling him out there, telling Brent, you know, I just watched this aircraft save lives. And
right.
These clowns may have just jeopardized some.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's pretty funny looking back at it, but it's, you know, like, but it cost a lot of money. That antenna alone. What we were told, here's a $2 billion aircraft grounded, right. But the antenna alone was over $100,000 because they had to get in there and take down, you know, the hardware. They just broke the antenna off the surface, so they had to open it up, get down, remove other parts. So,
right.
Yeah, it was, of course, the government, they pay more money than they should on things. You
yeah.
know, a toilet can cost $2,000, you know, so that's what
but
they do.
But still, right, they're not messing around
no.
With the cafeteria or whatever.
No,
you know,
no,
it's,
no.
It's that aircraft.
Yeah.
They should know better.
Yeah,
right?
They should have, but, you know, like I was telling him, I said, you 18, 19, 20-year-old kids,
yeah.
You make the best. I mean, sometimes looking back, you're like, not a good idea, but
while
you're doing
actually,
it was
though,
fun.
I mean, you would think to a Nerf ball,
yes.
A Nerf football is not going to do much of anything.
I know. When it broke, I heard the little, you know, I heard the antenna hit on the concrete. Ting, ting. So I was
so
like, what was that?
How did they react when they heard that? I mean,
I can tell you one of them was like, that sucks. And I was like, yeah, it really does.
Understatement, right?
Yeah. So once I realized the tink, tink was not a good sign, that's where you see it laying in the crack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I go over and it's got a, you know, of course, the drainage in the middle. And I was like, yeah, I'm gone. You know what I mean? Like, I am gone. I told one of the NCOs, I said, you might want to go up there and check on them a little later. I said, I really don't want to go back and visit,
right.
You know. But, yeah, they were still throwing the Nerf football. Of course, after that, the Nerf football went away.
Yeah.
You didn't tell the officers, though, that they broke something on the plane and that it rhymed with the Schmentenna.
Yeah, that's I'm telling you, that one guy, he was like, man, that sucks. That he couldn't get it over the ventilation system.
Right.
And I was like, no, there's more to this than that.
Oh. That probably happens a lot.
The
though,
incomplete just, pass yeah. was what was bothering
yeah,
him.
Yeah, you know.
They're like, people are playing those kind of games all the time, though,
yes.
Outside, right? They're wanting to throw things, you know.
Yes.
It's like they're not that the killing time, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a natural activity outside.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of like driving, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so didn't they kill some time driving some cars?
Oh, yes, we did, yeah. And that was actually located over in Saudi Arabia. Prince Sultan Air Base, we had what we call rolling hills, and they were rolling. You'd sit down here, and you had a low-lying road, and you'd park, and you'd watch these guys jump. So you could look up the hill and watch these guys catch the air, and I was telling Brent, these Hummers, they'll fly. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
For a heavy vehicle. Of course, they were the old Kevlar side, you know, that later they go to an up-armored.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the ones that you could just shoot through almost. The doors were so thin.
Right.
But those things would fly. And I'm telling you, they'd catch distance that you would not believe. A Hummer. I mean, it'd get some air.
Yeah.
How many yards could it go?
Ooh. I'd say I've seen it anywhere on out closer to 15 yards on one. And the lift off the hill, I know for a fact I was in the passenger seat for one. I swear we were every bit of 8 to 10 feet off the ground because the ammo cans went everywhere and flew. And I ended up in the middle console, you know, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get the whole seatbelt thing, but who wears that at 23?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Honestly, you know, it's like
otherwise jumping in. Yeah. Clicking that seatbelt
on
man. In that situation.
You got to enjoy the whole, it's anti-gravity for three
right.
seconds, you know. Even though the guy over here, if the window's down, I've seen this, if the window's down, it can almost throw you out of the vehicle because the steering column will jerk them.
Right.
And if you're not wearing your seatbelt, I've almost seen a guy literally hanging out of a window.
Yeah.
And that's the part where you're like, yeah, this is real. You know what I mean? This
yeah.
is a real hazardous.
That could have hurt us. Making the opposite point. Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe do wear that seatbelt.
Yeah, yeah. But I was telling him, part of our inspection because of our pastime doing this is we started had to inspect the fan shrouds inside the vehicle there with the fan on the radiator. Because
mm-hmm.
on impact, your fan would hit that plastic fan shroud. It would eat away at it.
Okay.
So anytime you took over a vehicle, you'd have to take your flashlight and look in. And if it's chewed up, you had to note fan mm-hmm. shroud. You know what I mean? And if you did, the maintenance guy, who was an E6, a black dude out of Atlanta, Georgia, come up and chew you for about an hour.
And it literally hit the fan at that point.
Yeah,
right?
Hit the fan.
Yeah.
On, yeah.
He knew
yeah.
what you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. It's so after a while, it was fun. But, yeah, you had to write a statement, stay over for an hour and a half. And, I mean... That wasn't all fun. So those vehicles took some damage.
Right.
Especially to the fan shroud.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's the telltale sign.
The fan shroud.
The fan shroud.
Yeah. And what about camel spiders?
Oh, man. They're a weird little animal. At nighttime, you see them jumping. I heard about them, so I thought it was a F&G joke, we'll call it. We'll just leave it there.
Right.
New guy. You know, I thought, nah, they're just messing with me, you know. And I sit down on one of the entry control points, and you see it jumping. We had light all units that were, you know, running off diesel fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there watching them jump, and I thought, what is that? So I asked this guy I was with, I said, what's over jumping? He goes, that's those camel spiders they told y'all about.
Right.
Why does it, you know?
So is it spider? It's a
yeah,
real spider.
Yeah, you know, and that's what I always tell my girlfriend. I'm like, man, I got a list of questions. If I could sit down with God, I'd be like, why? Spitting cobras, camel
right.
spiders, like, you love us. Why are you setting us up to get
yeah.
eaten by these things? You know what I mean? Like,
right, that they exist.
Yeah, yeah, you know, so it's like, I like to have a day, just sit down with him, just be like, all right, checklist, mosquitoes.
Right.
What do they do? You know what I mean?
And the camel spider does eat flesh, right?
It does. It's a flesh-eating animal. And the reason it jumps on the back of camels. And the fangs, they'll actually numb with the venom and eat the flesh.
Okay.
So we used to, somewhere in our head, we thought,
yeah,
oh, man, let's catch these things in a scorpion, see them fight.
Uh-huh.
You know
Which
what
one
I mean?
Will win?
Did that happen?
Yes, it did. Several
okay.
times. You had your black emperors, you know, of course, your clear and your yellow scorpions. Your emperor, your black one, you can buy them at a pet store.
Right.
He got owned. I mean, he really did. Like the camel spider, it was really, I never seen one of those dudes.
I've never even heard of that
yes.
before.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we how we caught them is a trick. You take cold water and shock them. You just throw it on them. And
right.
you can pick them. I mean, it's kind of cruel now, looking back, like you douse them, they're laying there like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, I'm almost dead. You drop their body temperature, but you put them in a box. And when they come to and they get around, they go, you know, they'll kind of fill each other out.
Right.
You make bets. You can wager on it. I've
oh,
seen
sure.
that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's kind of the point of the fight.
The scorpion, you get to the yellow and the more venomous. Those dudes were serious. The emperor scorpion, like I said, he's a pet. Like he's cool. He's like, why am I in this box?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I just want to walk around, hang out. The other guys would pinch the outside legs on one side of the spider so he couldn't turn, and they'd hit him with the stinger.
Right.
So that's how I've always seen them win, and I thought, it's neat, but the poor black scorpion over here, man, gets I mean, he's just the punk. I mean, you know, so.
Why have I been put into this situation?
Yeah, he wakes up, he's like, that water is so cold.
I mean, right. we caught lizards, pit vipers. Yeah. You know, and I was telling Brent, looking back at it, that's actually like one of the top 10 deadliest snakes in the world.
Right.
Like, why? Well, I mean,
see it on these lists on the internet, right? The top 10 deadliest, and then here they are handling the thing.
So I can tell you personally, I pinned the head down on one of them things. And, you know, I've grabbed copperheads, water moccasins here, you know, local. I pinned the head down. I wasn't really thinking I was in the sand. You know what I mean? Like, he could be wiggled out.
Ooh.
And this buddy of mine, Scott Franklin, he's a Missouri Highway Patrolman now. He said, I've never seen a white boy jump so high. I jump vertical back up on the hood of the Hummer with full gear because I was so scared.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, my God, you got some hops. I was like, I almost died.
11-foot goal
right.
that day.
Yeah. I was like, I almost really died right then.
Right.
Like, but then somewhere inside, the young man was like, I got to catch a snake still.
Yeah.
Oh, you went back after the snake.
I got it, but why?
But you know when you're that close and it's that loose.
Yeah, I don't understand.
You're
going
to have
to
jump away.
Yeah, I totally was not thinking right.
That's one of those learning experiences, I think.
And I'm here alive. That's what I'm like, wow, how?
Hey, it worked out.
I need to pay the lottery.
You seem fine.
Yeah. I've been rewired. I'll call it rewired. My little girl being born helped tame me a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, you got to be a little more careful at that point, don't you?
Yeah, yes. Yes,
you
do.
We've got to pay some bills, though. Our sponsor for this part of the program is Mario's Tub Takeouts. Now you can dine at home without cooking a bite. This is from 1962, by the way. Baked lasagna tub, $1.85, includes baked lasagna, combination salad, dressing, bread, butter. 1 pound tub of fried chicken, $1.45. Includes a half a fried chicken, french fried potatoes, salad, Italian bread and butter. But my personal favorite, the 6 pound tub of chicken, $7.45. Includes 3 whole fried chickens, 2 pounds of french fried potatoes, salad, Italian bread and butter. Call ahead for carryouts. Enjoy food that really tastes good in an atmosphere of good taste. Mario's, famous for pizzas. Nothing Ooh. Says good taste like 3 pounds of chicken in a bucket.
Didn't really sound all that bad, I have to tell
you. It sounds awesome.
It sounds like a lot of food. Yeah. They're getting into the chicken business from pizza. Don't know why. But, yeah, this is not really bad. It's just...
It's kind of the beginning
three
of
chickens.
Takeout, too, though.
Right.
Drive-thrus, takeout... Before, if you go one generation before this, all the cooking's at home.
Yeah.
But now you eat out a little bit, and they are providing it in mass.
Yeah, it's kind of neat that it's in a bucket, too.
Yeah, lasagna in a bucket? Why not? I love it.
The bucket tub.
I could totally eat that.
Yeah, I got to agree with it. This just sounds like a good idea.
Finally, something good to eat on this program. I've been waiting for that after liver and oysters. Mm. And one more thing that I've been waiting for, though, Jason, today's takeaway. Biggest thing that you got out of today's program?
Well, we're sitting here with Rob. I think mainly because I didn't hear any of these stories before. We talked about some other things, that he didn't talk about when I met him earlier, and like a takeaway for me is just people in that situation, you know, they're there in a very dangerous, important situation, but they're still people.
Sure.
And they're still young men.
Yes.
And they are still needing to have some light moments.
Yeah.
You know, be able to relax.
We did.
Still be a person.
You had that covered.
Several.
You know, and that's those kinds of stories really make that situation seem more real.
Yeah.
If you weren't there, and that's what I got out of, and the stories he told during this podcast, just very real people doing that specific job. Yeah. And Rob, too, of course, I know you hear this, but thank you for service to the country.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate it. But at the end of the day, I always tell people, man, you need to thank the Vietnam vets. They didn't get that. You know, everybody else, World War II, got a big welcome home.
Definitely.
Your Vietnam vets, my dad, they didn't get that. So
That's a good point.
Yeah, that is one way we treated you better than we treated them. Sure. That is true.
So tell them big thanks every time you see them.
Yeah.
Agreed. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter. But never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return, for some reason. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. If you did not like what you hear, you didn't make it to this point in the podcast anyway. Special thanks to our producer, Todd Birdsong, our guest, Rob Forrester, the Paducah School of Art and Design, WKMS, and the rest is history.